Kneeling down near the visitor's dugout, Robert Turner sat poised, ready to bounce up and retrieve the next discarded bat or dash into foul territory after the next stray ball. When the umpire spied Robert through the pass gate earlier that day and asked if the kid wanted to tote bats and shag balls, the 12-year-old couldn't think of a better way to spend his free evening. And he set his own price.
$2 and two balls. $2 was a lot of money in those days for a 12-year-old. School lunch cost 30 cents. Go to the show cost 20 cents. Two balls. You trade them in. They assumed that they were balls from the Red Wings. So this is where they would recollect balls that had gone over the fence by allowing two people to come in on a return ball. It was on an ad hoc basis. So I got there early enough to make sure that I could work. And a couple times, fellas tried to slip another guy in on me, you see. But I managed to maintain.
A couple thousand fans would watch the games at Red Wing Stadium. The New York Black Yankees did not dominate like the powerhouse white New Yorkers of Ruthian fame. But the Negro Leaguers had their superstars and super play, and more than held their own when the white teams had the courage to share the field with the ostracized blacks.
Oh, man. They were on the case, so to speak. I mean, they came out there to inflict serious damage to the opposition. And I'm not talking physical, but psychological damage in terms of the intensity of the rivalry and of the that took place within the game itself. I remember the Kansas City Monarchs. I remember the Newark team, Chicago. I recall the Chicago because the guy hit the ball. He was a slender fellow, maybe about 6'2". And he hit that ball right into the lights at Red Wing Stadium. I never forget that. People couldn't believe it. People got quiet, that ball went so far.
He never knew whose bats he brought back to the dugout. During all the games he worked, Turner can't remember a single conversation with the ball players. But it was just bats and balls. The players never had him running around doing errands or shining shoes.
No. These men were very independent anyway. Quite often they'd leave the park in their uniforms, you see, at night to get out of town quickly and go on to the next stop with their uniforms on and change in a bus or along the way somewhere, I presume. They came into the game, into the park to play ball and to put on a good show for the fans, and that was it. They didn't have the need to ego trip off of people in lesser positions than they.
There was one player who everybody knew, and that was the great Satchel Paige.
Oh, man, Satchel was there. And I heard about this hesitation pitch. I actually thought the hesitation pitch was that you throw the ball and in the air, the ball would slow down. So I'm out there all bug-eyed, waiting to see this hesitation pitch. I didn't know that it had to do with his delivery and emotion and the motion that it involved. But man, there was nothing you could say about Satchel Paige. You could tell when that cat was on the mound, he was in control. Just that simple. I don't recall the score. I do also remember in the game he told everybody to sit down, the outfielders to sit down. The showmanship and that, and I don't recall what happened. But you got to imagine Satchel Paige, what he meant, you see. He was like Ali. He was great. You were in awe. You were awestruck by him.
Over 2 years, Turner can remember just a couple of times when the anger rode high among the players, when the hours of bumpy car or bus rides between cities for, at times, triple headers got to the players. One incident during a clubhouse card game, another after a tossed bat rattled around the dugout. But there was time for humor, too, when one team, losing by a million late in the game, sent a midget up to the plate to embarrass the other team.
He was a catcher. He was a batting practice catcher, this guy was. So they put him in the game. He had a uniform and everything. He was about maybe 4 feet. And he was supposed to stand up there and just take the count and walk to first base. Then at least they had laughing rights, if not bragging rights, when they get down to the bar, you see. Do you know the midget got up there and took the pitches like he was supposed to, but then something got into him and he began swinging at the pitches and he struck out.
Decades later, Robert Turner returns by memory to those dusty days of his youth when somebody would say, let's go to the ball game, and the group would walk the mile or so down Joseph Avenue for Red Wing games. If you didn't have money or a knothole pass, just jump the fence. And when the Wings were on the road, the Negro Leaguers came in. And Turner didn't have to hop no fence. He went in with the players, the entertainers, the talent. And years later, he can evaluate what exactly that bat boy job meant.
I was in control of the situation that I enjoyed, and in which I, from which I prospered, and which I learned something about myself, because you had no way of doing it. I learned that these guys are just like we are over here, and they're from all over the country, and they're intense, and they operate, and they play to win, and they don't take second best in what they're doing. That was a great lesson for me. It just did something for me, looking back in retrospect, that I didn't understand, because I just didn't recognize the racial barriers that really that existed in Rochester back when I was 12 years old, because they didn't exist for anyone 12 years old on the side of town, you see. I mean, it validated to me to show you that you can be worldwide, known nationwide, because of your excellence, because you can do something better than anybody else. This validated me and kept me staying in school, in high school, where I was being invalidated.
Negro League's Bat Boy, Robert Turner. I'm Bill Flynn.